I'm Rich Egger, and this is Emphasis. Today's guest is Sue Scott. She's curator of the Western Illinois Museum. The new exhibit at the museum is called What We Wore. Now, how long back are we looking at what people wore?
This exhibit is based on our collection, and the earliest piece that we have on display is an 1868 wedding dress. And it's quite elaborate, and it was worn by Mary Catherine Tinsley, and she must have been stunning in this gown. The story is that her father was Nathan Tinsley, who came to Macomb in 1836, so when the town was fairly just beginning. And he was a very successful businessman, owning a dry goods store and a mill, and he also built many homes. He was married to Talithia Walker, who died, and as well as the other three children in their family. So Mary Catherine would have been the only surviving daughter of Nathan. So you can see he lavished probably a great amount of expense on her for this gown. It's a copper-colored. It's got glass beads on the trim, and it has this sort of zigzag edge, even with on the bustle. The theory on this, some of this, is that this is half handmade and half machine stitched. So the sewing machine is becoming more common in clothing construction. And they kind of go kind of wacky here, don't they?
Well, and I was going to ask you about the color, because I would have expected a white wedding dress back in 1868, and this is copper-colored. Is there a reason for that color?
White really doesn't come into fashion until Queen Victoria, and still even a lot of people didn't adopt it. And again, even though this probably wouldn't have been a very traditional wedding dress for most women in our area, women would have made a fancy dress to get married in, but it would have been the dress they would have wore to Sunday services or any other special occasion, and many of them were even black. So I think the thinking about a dedicated one dress, one time wearing, was just not possible for many women of that time.
Sure. So this would have been worn on other occasions, perhaps before she got married and after she got married.
Well, it was probably made for the occasion, but mm-hmm. It would have been something she would have wore as, you know, a woman then, a married woman in the community. And you can see it, again, it has a sort of bustle on it, and that would have been maybe for more fancy occasions. And as fashions changed, it gave her some latitude to take that bustle off, too.
Is this part of your permanent collection, or how did you come to acquire this to put it on display?
This item was donated to us, and these are all on part of our permanent collection. We have quite an extensive collection. On view, we only have about 75 of those items, including some accessories as well. What else should we look at?
Well, first, what was the thinking behind this exhibit? Why did you decide to display what people wore in Macomb and McDonough County over the years?
I think people love clothing. It's something that we all have and we're familiar with. And it's a great way to actually learn about culture and traditions. Again, we just looked at what this dress revealed about a businessman and the wealth of their family. Some other things in terms of dedicated clothing, we have swimwear and gymwear, and that also sort of shows a pivotal change in times and acceptance about what women were able to wear out in public. So clothing can be a window into learning about our traditions and culture.
The wedding dress is in a glass display case near the entrance to the exhibit room here. Is everything laid out chronologically, or how do you have this exhibit laid out here?
It's not chronological because our collection does not include examples of every period, unfortunately, even though we have quite an extensive collection. We have sort of fancier dresses in the middle, and then we have a section of children's clothing. We have sportswear and leisure wear. We also have a section of uniforms that includes military and band uniforms and even a Boy Scout uniform.
I see some, we're talking about dresses and uniforms, but I see some shoes on display too.
Right, and so as we get into early 1900s, women's skirts become a little bit simpler. They're more straight, even though they still are long. We're losing some of that bustle as well. And a lot of that has to do with women start to enter the workforce a little bit, and they need to be able to move around a little bit more easily. And so the shoes actually, they become a little bit more utilitarian, right? They're flat, they're button-up, but you still have those spats. And while that was a decorative element, it also was a little bit of a modesty thing, too. I mean, practical, kept them clean, but, kind of not to show too much ankle or anything there.
Do we see, as you look at clothing through here, do you see sizes growing larger and larger over the years.
Yes, it was difficult for some of this clothing to find the proper mannequin to display them on. Also, you mentioned some of them laying flat. A lot of them are very fragile, especially silk, and so to keep the garments and preserve them the best we can, we've laid them sort of flat to not, you know, put any strain on the fabric. Yeah, I think the other thing that's interesting is you see a shift from, you know, handmade or one, you know, tailor-made garments to mass-produced or ready-to-wear kind of garments, and that starts to happen in the 20s. So that's another shift that you're able to see as well.
Before we started talking for this program, you pointed out a piece here that's especially unusual. Can you talk about that a little bit?
It was a stumper for us because it's a dress that is not long in length, but the fabric, it really harkens to an 1880 petticoat. It's very, you know, fancy embroidered and sort of laced edged, but it troubled me in terms about when it was produced because of its length and other velvet feature collars and buttons. And the style is very not like anything I could pinpoint a certain era on. And as we examined it, we realized it was a petticoat that had been repurposed. And so the top, the bodice part is actually one of the layers from the bottom of the petticoat that's been kind of put as like almost like a shawl across the top with a black collar and buttons. So it's actually quite, you know, beautiful. And I think it points to me how our area is in some way very practical. You find something beautiful and maybe a treasure in your family, and you repurpose it to make give it a new life, make it a new fashion statement.
As a dress, that would have been an immodest length back in those days?
Exactly. So it definitely had to be something that was made probably in, you know, in the 20th century, for sure.
Yeah, we've been talking a little bit about some of the older items, but you have stuff from, I guess, the middle of the 20th century on display here, too, as you move a little farther into the exhibit here.
We have a number of dresses from the 20s and 30s, which are some of my favorites, but we also have a dress from a woman, Mary Stefanovich, who is still an active member in our community, and it's kind of a lavender satin gown that she wore while she was interim dean of women at the university, and she would have to chaperone dances and things, and so this is something that she had made to go to those events, and she prides herself that she could still wear it, and she actually still looks quite lovely in it. There's a photo on display of her in the dresses, you know, that was taken last summer.
Yeah, you have a few other photos up here. Not a lot. Mostly it's artifacts that are on display. How did you choose what photographs to put up?
I was trying to show what the clothing would look like on the person. And we actually found this great cabinet card of one dress from the 1880s. And it's very similar. It's this kind of robe braiding that's in a flower shape. And when I first saw it, I'm like, oh my, we found the dress. But it actually has three of those, you know, elements, and our dress only has two. So chances are it was a very common element that you might have been able to buy at a notion shop or a pattern that people found in maybe one of the magazines of the time. The Godey's Woman's Journal would have shown people how to make clothing. So they might have taken that pattern and put it on those dresses. But it really does help people to see, you know, how they were worn, the jewelry that it might have been added or other features that have been worn with some of these garments.
The museum last summer was involved with the Game of the Year, sort of a recreation of a baseball game from, I believe, 1920, or right around that time frame. As a result of that, did you see or did you have more people bringing in perhaps some uniforms for you, baseball or other athletic uniforms for you to display?
We did. We were very fortunate to get a couple more baseball uniforms, one with the Gin Ridge on the back and one from the Macomb Moose Lodge. So those are they're great additions to the collection. And the interesting thing about them is that they're wool. And so, you know, when baseball began, cotton was considered a workman's clothing, right? And we would have thought it would be the appropriate thing to wear for sports play, but to give the game a certain level of integrity, they chose you know, the status of wool to make the players look more sophisticated, and it went on for a number of years. They wore those wool type uniforms.
Yeah, I think eventually it made them sweat a lot more wearing the wool in the summer.
Absolutely, but you know they did find thinner wools and stuff not as well. But they're actually quite lovely. We have a cap and some stocks that would have been worn as well. So that's nice to have a near complete uniform as well.
And we have a sweater here with a W, and it looks like a cardinal. Is that the old Western High School?
Yes, it is. And I don't have an exact year on that, but it's interesting to me how that style still fairly remains common to this day. I went into some of the sequels, and you can see that style, again and again. Right next to it is a football uniform, as we just watched the Super Bowl not too long ago in all the sophisticated gear they wore. This is very simple wool with quilted padding on the legs. And again, we have some photos from the sequels that show men, wearing those and actually playing football with their leather helmets and things like that.
Is that top, does that top go with those pants? Is that part of a football uniform?
They came together as part of the donation. I have not found that top in those photos. I'm not sure if it was just a warm-up jacket or something like that, even though it was short-sleeved. So the fabric is very similar.
Yeah, it does not look like what you would consider to be a football jersey.
And most of them seem to wear more of a tighter-knit, sweatery kind of garment with those pants.
In the far corner of the exhibit, are these bathing suits here?
That's a combination of bathing suits, leisure wear, and gym suits. I think the first one is the earliest one would be a 1900 gym suit wore at the university here by a woman, Isola Rolleston, and she was a student there. And it's got these bloomers. It's actually also still wool, and it has a top with longer sleeves. And you compare that to a 1930s gym suit that was worn at the Adair High School by Dorothy Bagley, and not much has changed. I mean, the legs are still real full. It is sleeveless, so that would have helped with some of the movement during sports play, but not a whole lot has changed. Also in this corner, which I found interesting, is a 1930s garment that, again, we were trying to figure out, what was this worn for, because it almost has the same bloomer bottom as those early gym suits, but it's silk, and it's actually quite lovely. And taking a look and researching that, we found that at that era, there was a shift in what was perceived as health-conscious perception, right? So alabaster skin prior to that would have been considered what you were after, right? If you were tan, you were a laborer because you were outside all day. But resorts started to come into play and the wealthy started to go and sunbathe. And so you have this new leisure wear coming, and they were like pajamas and things you'd wear poolside so you can get some sun. And that look was considered sloppy, and there's some criticism of that look. So you could still see there's always some criticism of new fashion even then.
I like the design on that one. That really harkens to the 20s or 30s, doesn't
right.
it?
Yeah, it's this sort of embroidered piecework that's on sort of the midsection of the gown. It's a rust color in brown. It's quite lovely, yes.
Before we run out of time here, can you tell us information about the exhibit? How long will it remain on display, and what hours is the museum open?
The exhibit will be on display through April 20th, and the museum is open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4. Admission is free, but we do appreciate donations. And please check our website. We have all kinds of activities and things planned as well.
All right, and we're just about out of time. Is there anything else you would like to mention about this exhibit or anything in particular you think people should make sure they check out before they walk out of here?
Don't discount the show if you're not interested in clothing, because I think there's a lot of interesting things in here. There's a section on military uniforms as well, Boy Scout uniforms, band uniforms, children's wear. So I think there's something here for everyone.
Sue Scott is curator of the Western Illinois Museum in Macomb. We've run out of time for today. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Rich.
For Tri-States Public Radio News, I'm Rich Ecker.